I am Planta on the line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. The Globe and Mail's Anne Huey joins me now. She has just published a beautiful book, Chop Suey Nation, The Legion Cafe and Other Stories from Canada's Chinese Restaurants. In the book, Ms. Huey chronicles a cross-country road trip to various Chinese restaurants that seem to be in every small town, from Victoria, British Columbia to Fogo Island, Newfoundland. The book is also a memoir about Anne's dad and mom and how they too owned a Chinese restaurant. We meet some fascinating people along the way, not just Chinese, who run these small restaurants, adding to the country's story, not to mention our conception of cuisine, be it what's authentic Chinese food, as well as the fare that's inspired by whatever is found in the various parts of the country, like pierogies or chow mein that uses shredded cabbage instead of noodles. Since 2015, Anne Huey has been the Globe and Mail's national food reporter. She has written for The Walrus, National Post, Toronto Star, and Victoria Times Colonist. She's a two-time National Newspaper Award nominee, and though she grew up around Vancouver, she joins me from Toronto, where she lives today. This new book is published by Douglas and McIntyre. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Anne Huey. Ms. Huey, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Thanks for joining us. You're very welcome. This idea of fake Chinese food, I mean, it confounds a lot of people because I live in Vancouver, you grew up in Vancouver, and so we're surrounded in this town, and I'm sure it's the same in Toronto and every other metropolitan city in this country, with what some people would call authentic Chinese food, you know, food that people from Hong Kong or from mainland China are accustomed to, rather than sort of this North American version. I guess that's the best way to describe fake Chinese food, right? North American, say?
Though in my research I have come across dishes that would probably fall under this same, quote, fake Chinese umbrella that were created elsewhere. You know, there's Brazilian Chinese food, there's Mexican Chinese food, there's Chilean Chinese food. So it's not strictly North American, but I think the variety of it that we're used to here in Canada and in the United States is definitely a North American thing.
The other thing that I found fascinating are the sort of Canadian variations. You mentioned these other countries and what they've sort of adapted to. What are some of the uniquely Canadian, say, variations on Chinese food?
Yeah, I was surprised by these. I set out on my original road trip and my original journey with all of this really believing that this was a primarily American story. A lot of us have seen some of the American story told before, how a lot of these dishes were first created in San Francisco, and some of them made their way north of the border, but I was delighted to find that we definitely have our own Canadian-specific chop suey dishes on the West Coast, or primarily in the prairies, but it's made its way to the West Coast, is ginger beef.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a dish that's thinly sliced cuts of beef that's, you know, flash fried with batter and coated in this kind of sweet chili sauce. And that was created in Calgary in the 1970s. There's a dish that I found in Quebec called fried macaroni, which is basically like a stir-fried noodle that you would find anywhere else, only they use elbow macaroni.
Right.
And then in Newfoundland, if you order chow mein, you get, instead of chow mein, which is literally egg noodles or fried noodles, you get thin strips of cabbage. And that's because when the Chinese cooks first started opening restaurants in Newfoundland, they weren't even able to get something as basic as egg noodles. You know, it's an island province. And so they had a hard time, even more than most Chinese cooks, in getting ingredients. And so they just had to improvise, which is really kind of what this whole cuisine is about. You know, it's improvisation. It's making the best with what these cooks had available.
So this trip that you took across the country with your husband began in Victoria, and you made your way to Newfoundland, mainly by car. When was this? This was a couple of years ago, right?
This was in the early spring of 2016. 2018.
I see. So 3 years ago now. And did you know of all the places that you ended up going to? I think there was one or two where I guess the you looked on your phone and found what was close, right?
Yeah, it was a mix. There were definitely stops that were pre-planned and pre-scheduled. I'm thinking of Stony Plain, Alberta, for example. That's a town that's about 40 minutes outside of Edmonton. And I knew I wanted to visit that town and that restaurant as soon as I heard that the owner of the Chinese restaurant there, William Choi, is also Stony Plain's mayor. Mm. So that's the kind of place where I knew that I had to visit and should probably call ahead and book an appointment.
Right.
But there were definitely there was a lot of wiggle room that I built in for happy accidents. So really, beyond, I'd say about half of the stops that I had planned, yeah. Everything else, we were just kind of winging it. You know, sometimes we would go to a town where I'd originally thought I might find something, and then maybe the Chinese restaurant was closed.
Right.
Or sometimes I would go there and, you know, there wouldn't be that much different or that much that was compelling enough to necessarily want to write about it. And so we would just Google the next town over, and sure enough, pretty much every town had a Chinese restaurant.
And they were not all run by Chinese people. I mean, there are some folks who are originally from Vietnam, some folks that were Korean as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Definitely Vietnamese. There were probably, I think, three families I encountered on that 18-day trip that were ethnically Vietnamese, though I don't recall if any of them had Chinese blood in them.
Yeah.
But definitely primarily ethnically Vietnamese. The Korean family is a little bit more tongue-in-cheek. They were running a Korean restaurant, but I get to it in the book, how their restaurant, too, might, if you use a very loose definition of Chinese restaurant, might also qualify as a Chinese restaurant.
And so one of the things that you wanted to do as you set out this project was to find out what motivates these people, the proprietors, in one case, just one person running the restaurant. And you know, what they do it for. How long into this, or did you know when you started your own family story, say?
Sorry, how long
before? Yeah, when did you find out about your own parents and their experience in terms of running a restaurant themselves?
Mm-hmm. So that didn't actually happen until after the road trip. So
really?
I did the road trip in spring of 2016. And that was for the Globe and Mail, which is where I work.
Uh-huh.
And so I completed the road trip. I wrote up a giant story on it, published it, and, you know, I got a very nice response, and people really seemed engaged with the subject. But for the most part, I thought I was done with it. But it was only a few months after, in that summer, when I was back in Vancouver visiting my parents, and just talking to them and asking, especially my dad, some questions about his life before me, before my sisters and I, that it came out that one of the restaurants that he had owned before I was born was actually a Chinese restaurant. And that was just really stunning to me because, you know, I couldn't believe that I didn't know this information. I couldn't believe that I'd done this whole road trip without this whole road trip asking all of these other families about their lives and about their histories, and I hadn't even thought to ask my own parents.
Mm.
And I just didn't understand why that was. You know, it seemed to be a bit of a mix between my not having thought to ask and definitely not pushed hard enough for answers, but there had always been a bit of a reluctance from my parents to talk about their histories and their past, especially my dad.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to lean into that a little bit and figure out what it was about his story, about so many of our stories, really, that we either don't think are worth sharing or don't think are worth telling.
Yeah. Yeah. And so in your father's case, there was also some family things that I guess he didn't know and stuff that he obviously didn't tell you. as you were growing up that eventually gets uncovered in the book, right?
Yes, without giving away too much.
Yeah.
You know, I knew the bare details of my dad's life. I knew that, you know, he had been born in a very small village in Guangdong, southern China. I knew that his parents had separately basically left him behind in China. You know, his father had come to Vancouver when he was just one, when he was just a toddler. And then his mom had come to Canada about a decade after that. And so I knew that there had been a long separation. I knew that he wasn't able to come to Canada until his mid-20s. And that because of this, because of that separation, because he had been left behind, because it took so long for him to come to Canada, he never really had a relationship with his parents. And so I was never able to have a relationship with my grandparents.
Yeah.
But all of those details in between and you know, all of the whys and all of the explanations for why that was, nobody ever talked about. And so that was part of why it was so important for me to do this digging and to understand this history. And of course, there was a very real timeline behind all of this, too. My dad was sick all throughout this. I mean, that was the backdrop to everything. That was, you know, the reason why I had been in Vancouver to begin with that summer. My dad had been diagnosed with cancer, and so I was spending a lot of time in Vancouver wanting to spend time with him, talk to him. And so I knew that if I wanted to get answers to these questions, that I had to do them then.
Yeah. And so you mentioned a moment ago that he never really talked about this stuff. So how were you able to get him to open up about a lot of, say, these details that you and your sisters didn't know about?
Mm-hmm. It was a long process. I mean, I'm a journalist by trade. And so my job is to ask questions and ask nosy and uncomfortable things that people would probably not normally be happy to disclose.
Right.
And so I think that by us kind of playing those roles, I mean, he knew what it was that I was doing. He knew what it was that I was working on, and he, you know, was interested in being part of it. But I think the fact that, you know, I was, when we were doing the interviews, kind of taking on this role of journalist and he was taking on this role of subject, it maybe made things a little bit easier.
Right.
I was able to maybe kind of put on that hat and maybe ask those questions that in normal day-to-day conversation would probably be much too uncomfortable for me to broach with my dad. And maybe him, you know, feeling like we were in these roles, it maybe made him feel a little bit more compelled to answer my questions too.
Yeah. It you capture him so beautifully. There's a wonderful, scene where, I forget the name of the restaurant. It was in Vancouver, one of the first restaurants that he worked at. And I guess he was watching them make the roast duck. The process, I guess he tells you what the process is and how to get the skin the way it is. Mm-hmm. He pours hot oil on it, and then the moment that he tries it, his head spins. I mean, it's such a beautiful moment in terms of getting to know something that he experienced for the first time, but at the same time, it's his own skill as a cook and how he, I guess, develops that. Because once he gets to Abbotsford and they open up the Legion Cafe, he really needed to learn at that point to cook sort of the Western dishes like hamburgers and egg sandwiches, right?
Mm-hmm. It was a whole different world for him. And beyond learning how to cook those Western dishes, you know, the pea and ham soup and the chicken a la king, he also had to learn this new genre of Chinese, because what he had been taught how to cook in Chinatown in Vancouver was, you know, mostly Cantonese cuisine or what we would describe as, quote, authentic Chinese. Mm-hmm. Whereas when he went out to Abbotsford, something, he had to learn how to cook this chop suey Chinese cuisine, which, you know, he had also never tried before, things like lemon chicken and sweet and sour, well, not chicken balls because that's not so much a BC thing, but, you know, sweet and sour pork done in the chop suey style. Yeah. You know, these were all dishes that were brand new to him as well.
Yeah. This, as you explore your own family story and of course, the families of the people that you meet across the country, the idea of immigrant families making a life for themselves, but more importantly, for the future, these are stories that that are, as you said a moment ago, largely untold. And when you got people to talk about their experiences and talk about why they were doing it, did that surprise you, I guess?
It surprised me in a few ways. I mean, not all of the stories were the same. I definitely heard a range of experiences, especially because the restaurant owners I was meeting, they were all on different points of their journey. You know, some had only just arrived in the last 2 or 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And so they were still relatively new, and they were still in that very nervous stage of not knowing whether or not this gamble really was going to pay off for them. So I definitely heard some of that. Whereas I also talked to, you know, people like William Choi's family in Stony Plain, and William is of, I think, third generation Choi to run that restaurant, and so he, you know, they have a proven successful track record there. So just by virtue of that, I was going to hear quite different stories. But at the same time, and I know I'm contradicting myself here, but there was definitely what jumped out at me was the fact that I kept hearing over and over and over and over again, you know, we did it for the kids, we did it so that they could have a better life. I can't tell you how many parents, how many restaurant owners, you know, would point to their kids who are often right there in the restaurant with them, and say, you know, we did it for Cindy, or, you know, we did it for William, or and so on and so forth. You know, it's really this idea of not just building a new life and creating better opportunities for themselves, but really doing it for that next generation in hopes that they will have more opportunities and will have a chance at a better future.
So I'm a little bit older than you are, and my parents came from the Philippines. And so, so this was totally relatable in the sense that the time that you're talking about in terms of your story, is about the same time that my parents came to this country. There's a beautiful scene near the end of the book where you talk to one daughter, who is relatively rather successful, I should say, in Toronto, and the two of you are talking about, I guess, how you view this whole experience and about not wanting to, say, disappoint your parents, or in her case, about how she turned out, and especially because of the sacrifice of her parents. You must have come out, having done this book now, terribly proud of your parents. Are you?
Absolutely. I think proud is an understatement. You know, awe is another way of putting it. You know, understanding, first of all, even just that first choice that they made to come to this place, to come to Canada, in both of them in their 20s, you know, leaving behind everything that they knew, the language that they spoke, their careers, their friends, their family, in a lot of cases, to come to this new place and take on that challenge, I mean, that is just, I can't even imagine it. And I'm a decade older than they were when they took this on.
Uh-huh.
And then all of the other sacrifices that they made after that, it's just, it's awe-inspiring. And it's, you know, I talked earlier about how so many families, and my parents were reluctant to share their stories. But as soon as you start asking, and as soon as you just scratch a little bit beneath the surface and start hearing these stories, they're just, you know, really remarkable.
Yeah.
But quietly so, you know, and they're just under the surface. And that's why I just think it's so important for all of us who don't know our stories to ask them, because once I started understanding, you know, what my parents had been through, and again, I don't want to give it away, kind of the reveal, but once I understood what they had been through and understood those sacrifices and those challenges that I talked about, but also our place in history, and understood how our family story actually tells such an important part of Canada's history, it's just unlocked for me so much. In terms of identity, in terms of a sense of belonging. You know, we tend to, as more recent immigrants or children of recent immigrants, we tend to think of our stories as peripheral or as kind of sidebars to the main event.
Yeah.
And yet, that's not at all the case. You know, and once we start asking these questions and once we start seeing how we fit in, it's not the sidebar at all. We are the main event.
Yeah. What did your mom and your sisters think about you writing about your dad like this?
I wouldn't have done any of this if all of them weren't fully on board. My sisters, my mom, my dad were involved pretty much every step of the way, even before I put together a book proposal.
Uh-huh.
You know, they were there. They knew what my idea was. And my sisters were some of the first people to have read the first draft of this book. My aunts as well, my two aunts who are also in the book as well. I wanted to make sure that they were okay with everything that went in there, warts and all. I desperately wish that my dad could have seen this, could have read this. You know, we didn't make it in time. I knew that the timing was likely going to be such that he wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a huge, not regret, but the one kind of gutting thing about all of this is that he wasn't able to see this. Because I think it's incredible that people are reading his story and people are connecting with it. And he would have been so tremendously proud of that. And I just wish that he'd have a chance to see it.
And it's such a beautiful book. I mean, there are beautiful scenes in the book that no one will ask you about, but obviously won't, because it'll give away parts of the book. Just a couple more things that I wanted to ask you. I found it curious that you italicized some of the names of food. Was that something that you wanted to do, or is that the publisher's decision?
Oh gosh, I've lost track at this point of what we did and didn't italicize. I know that I was not very consistent with my use of italics, and at one point, the very patient and skillful editors at D&M made a decision to stick to a certain style. Though I have to confess, I don't quite remember exactly what style ended up being.
Yeah, I just found it odd because this is for most of us in this country now, whether we're Asian or not, a lot of the food is commonplace, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found it odd that was a choice that was made. In terms of all these places that you went to, you obviously didn't eat full meals because you'd get sick of the kind of food eventually. What's the best thing that you ate? I mean, let's say some of us find ourselves in a particular town somewhere in this country. What have we got to try?
I really, really enjoyed that Newfoundland chow mein. First of all, it was delicious. It really was. It was genuinely tasty.
Yeah.
After, you know, and that was towards the end of the trip. That was probably day 16 or 17. And to have that, you know, cabbage and veggie, and I think there was chicken in there as well, basically a stir fry. It just felt lighter than much of the diet that we had had for the previous 2 weeks. And so I appreciated it for that. But also, you know, using cabbage instead of noodles, even though I'm generally a really big fan of noodles, I can eat, for the most part, noodles every meal of every day not get sick of them.
Yeah.
But it actually was quite tasty. Like cabbage, cabbage has a depth to it, right? It has this kind of umami. And I'm sorry if you're rolling your eyes. It's using the word umami in conversation is very pretentious. I apologize. But it does. And it added a depth to the dish, and it was quite tasty. And I joke that, you know, Newfoundlanders figured out a way to do carb-free pasta or carb-free noodles before any of the rest of us did.
Yeah. You grew up in Vancouver, and you get out here often because you have family here. What's a place that you have to hit every time you're in town?
Does it have to be strictly Chinese?
No, it doesn't, no.
Though I do. I mean, obviously, Vancouver has amazing Chinese food.
Yeah.
I love Phnom Penh. I love that place.
Yeah.
I love it so much that I almost tried to sneak it onto a list that I was asked to compile for another media outlet recently. They asked me my five favorite Chinese restaurants in Vancouver.
Yeah.
And I tried to argue that because the owners are apparently ethnically Chinese, but that they've moved a few different places, Cambodia and Vietnam, that restaurant could potentially be arguably be considered Chinese. But I love it. I don't need to tell you about it.
You
live in Vancouver, so you probably know it very well. The butter beef, the wings, the squid is probably one of my favorites. And my husband, who's not from Vancouver, but we introduced it to him, and now it's one of his favorites too.
Yeah, I don't like the lineup part of it, but once you get over that part, and the other thing that I don't like is eating. If I'm alone, I don't like eating with other people. But I mean, you're forced to at that place,
right?
Because you want to eat there. And I mean, I quickly get over that just because of the food.
Right. I mean, you could do takeout.
That's true.
If it really offends you.
Yeah.
But make some new friends, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the other beautiful thing about this book. You make such beautiful connections with the people that you talk to in the book. Did you keep in touch with some of them?
A few of them, yeah.
Yeah.
Norina in Thunder Bay. She's the owner of Ling Lee's.
Uh-huh.
We're Facebook friends now, and so she's been keeping me in the loop throughout different stages of publication, and I know she was very excited to receive her book, and you know, she sent to me a photo of her reading it, and so she's been very excited, and that's been really nice to see. A few of the other restaurant kids in particular I've stayed in touch with as well. So, you know, off and on I've touched base with, like, Stacy, and there's another young woman in there whose story I share, Ganeg. So a few of them.
Yeah. I mean, now that you mentioned some of these names, I want to ask you about what they're up to. But I mean, it really suggest that maybe, I don't know, a follow-up maybe one day?
I would like to. I mean, I did touch base with all of the restaurant owners before the book, had gotten too far, just to make sure they knew that this was happening and that they were okay with it. So that probably would have been my last update with a lot of them. But yeah, I would love to, and I should probably do a better job of touching base with them now and seeing where everyone is.
And so at this point, as we're talking here in close to mid-March, all of them are still in business, right?
There's one of the restaurant owners who I know for sure has retired, essentially.
Uh-huh.
That's Richard from Deer Lake Canton Restaurant.
Uh-huh.
He was the one who I ordered the cabbage chow mein from.
Yeah.
He's moved back to BC, where his daughter, I believe, is still attending university. But he's moved back there. So I know that he has stopped working in the restaurant. But as far as I know, the rest of them are all still in business.
Have you talked to any readers who've read the book and have said to you that because of having read this, that they want to go to some of these places?
Oh, yeah. And that happened when the original Globe story came out as well. Mm. I know that a number of people, for example, made the pilgrimage out to Vogel Island because they wanted to meet Ms. Huang and they wanted to visit her restaurant there. And if you look at, like, the, I don't know if it's Yelp or which of the online restaurant review sites, there are a number of the reviews at her restaurant now that mention that they were drawn there because of the original Globe story.
Yeah.
I imagine with the book that might increase as well.
Yeah. You've done such a wonderful job in terms of writing this, and it is a beautiful book, and as I tweeted recently, I mean, I was reading it alternating between laughing and crying, but throughout the book, just hungry. congratulations on this. It's a very fine achievement, and I hope it's already a success, but I hope it continues to do well. Thanks for this.
Thank you, Joseph. Thank you for your kind words and for having me.
The book is called Chop Suey Nation, The Legion Cafe and Other Stories from Canada's Chinese Restaurants. It's published by Douglas and McIntyre. Its author, Anne Huey, joined me on the line from Toronto. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.